We are thrilled and honored to help Joan E. Bauer and Christopher Collins virtually host the 2021 Hemingway Summer Poetry Series. Our lineup for this week features Madeline Barnes, Cameron Barnett, M. Soledad Caballero, Jamila Rice, and Bart Solarchik. So just a little bit about White Whale quickly. White Whale Bookstore is a family-owned general interest independent store located in the Bloomfield neighborhood of Pittsburgh. We're doing lots of other virtual readings, book conversations, launches, workshops, and more. And we're currently open for browsing, curbside pickup, and shipping. And you can find out all about those things on our website, which is whitewhalebookstore.com. So just a few events coming up we think you might be interested in. Tomorrow night, June 2nd at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're hosting the virtual launch for local YA author Rachel Lippincott's first solo debut novel, The Lucky List. It's a book we already love and we're eager to share it with our customers and friends. Rachel will be joined by author Morgan Mattson, who is the author of Take Me Home Tonight. And then on Friday, June 4th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're looking forward to celebrating Leslie Wheeler's latest book, Unbecoming, with local writers Anjali Sachadeva, author of All the Names They Used for God, and Brittany Haler, the author of Animal You'll Surely Become. And there will be a reading in addition to a discussion about the edge where realism and fabulism meet. Then on Wednesday, June 9th at 7 p.m. Eastern time, we're welcoming poets Bronwyn Tate, Diamond Ford, and Samantha D. Flitch virtually to Pittsburgh for a reading. And on Friday, June 11th at 7 p.m., we're excited and grateful to be on Tiana Noble's virtual tour for her collection of poems, Cleave. She'll be joined by local poet and professor Diana Coy Nugent, author of Ghost Of, for a reading. You can RSVP and find out more about them as well as other events at whitewhalebookstore.com. And so just a quick note about all of our Zoom settings. You'll notice that you are currently muted and your camera is off and you're unable to rename yourselves. That'll be the setting for the entire evening. And the chat is set so that you can just message me. So if you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the bookstore or about the reading itself, please feel free to message me. We also welcome kind notes to all of our readers. We do share them after the fact. So if you have anything nice you want to say to our readers while they're reading or afterward, please feel free to message me those thoughts and we'll be sure to get them to our readers. And for best viewing, we recommend hiding non-video participants. So if you click on view in the upper right-hand corner of the video section of the screen and then click hide non-video participants, that's how you do that. As well, we have, of course, the closed caption on, and you can toggle that on and off by going down to the ellipses that says more and clicking on live transcript. And you can turn it on and off, or it'll be at the bottom of your screen where all of your mute, stop video, and other features are. And you can just click the CC button and toggle it on and off from there. So I believe that's all from me. I'm going to turn things over to Chris for his own intro for the series.
Hi. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us tonight. This is the third week of Virtual Hemingways. Thank you to Halsey and White Whale, of course, for being our partners this season. We could not do it without them. They really saved the Hemingway series this year, so we can't thank them enough. And thanks to our great readers tonight, all the poets who are going to read. I'm excited to listen to them. And thanks to Joan Bauer, my partner in this endeavor. So buckle up. Should be a great evening of poetry. I just want to start, I'll start by saying, so yesterday was Memorial Day. So family legend in my family was that my grandfather landed in Normandy on D-Day, but he never once spoke about it that I'm aware of. He never spoke of his military service to anyone. I know that my father, when my father got back from the service overseas, tried to engage my grandfather in conversations about shared experiences and such, but my grandfather would never say a word about any of it. My other grandfather, who died almost a year to the day before I was born, also served. I, of course, didn't get to meet him since he had died the previous year. I only knew him through photos and family stories, and also his service medals were passed down to me. And I remember quite vividly spending a lot of time looking at those medals and his Bronze Star in particular, which I still have stored away to pass on to my son. I bring this up because normally, in a normal Hemingway season, this reading would have probably been a Memorial Day reading. Joan and Jimmy always included a Memorial Day reading, inviting poets and writers to come in and read their work about their experiences in the service and during wartime and peacetime as well. So before we started tonight, I just wanted to acknowledge all of our friends who have come through the series over the years and have participated in that. And I wanted to read two very short poems by two friends of the series. First one is a poem by Bruce Weigel, who we had really hoped would be able to join us this season, but unfortunately could not. So this is Bruce Weigel's When Saigon Was French. I remember Françoise crossing the room in a naked blur, in the hotel on Trung Hung Do, dark except for flares falling in the cemetery, catching on the window, as if the caches of weapons would be visible. She was looking for something, a cigarette or some more clothes. It was her idiosyncrasy to move around afterwards, as it was mine to lie still. With the understanding that this was a war in which no one was called to duty, a war with no fronts. I was a day away from leaving and didn't want to go. A boy comes 6,000 miles from Ohio to fall in love with a French girl, to lord over my block of the black market and spend my money on cocaine. All that beautiful dying when Saigon was French. And the second poem I'm going to read is by Matt Borzon, Erie PA poet. He's read through the series a few times. This is called Finished. I sometimes imagine what it would be like to be done, to have nothing left to say about that war, that hospital, those ghosts, those nightmares. No more words for the dead children, and no words to describe the texture of a skin graft, or a stump, or the smell of a colostomy bag. No more words about death and fear and smoke and ash, or dreams that fill my reality like home movies. To put this down not for a minute, but forever. To have finally said it enough times that even I have to believe that it's over and it's time to move on. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks for coming out tonight. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. And we're going to turn things over to our first reader, Bart Solarczyk.
Hello. Thanks a lot, Chris and Joan and Halsey. First three poems I'm going to read here, Chris actually published online at his Pittsburgh Book Review. The first one kind of pays homage to a kind of a folksy Pittsburgh icon that we tend to do for the Blessed Mother. This is called Plastic Flowers. Queen of city steps and soot, Blessed Mother in a bathtub shrine, embracing slag, smoke, and hammers. Come adore her, plastic flowers never die. I've been thinking a lot about aging because I am aging and I'm turning gray and white and I recently retired, so I'm getting good at doing nothing. So this is this poem is called Gray to White. The small things become big in both the doing and the meaning. Years so long once, now going fast. You're here, and you're this old. The small things become big, layered like lost smiles. The doing and the meaning, gray to white, ashes in a jar. I like crows, and when I walk my dog, I frequently encounter crows in the park, and sometimes I carry on conversations with them. And this is a poem. This is called Crow Heart. In the rain on the wire, on the cold bare branch, shadow in the autumn sky, crow sees me drunk, calls my name like a curse. Crow Heart. Lonely like mine. There's a reason for this loneliness, and the next three poems address that directly. On April 6th of 2020, my wife died suddenly of a heart attack. She was 61 years old, and it was during the pandemic. We were able to have no ceremony, and so we just kind of went on with life and had to quarantine for a long time after that. It took a little while, a few months, before I started writing about her. And these next three poems kind of address that. And the first poem is called Tammy. Every inch a mile and every clock eternity. I miss you. I stay drunk. I'm on my way. The next one I wrote in my backyard. I was sitting out there having a few beers and staring at my neighbor's house. And this is called 3 months now. The side of my neighbor's house looks like a yellow brick skull with a green hedge beard and dirty window eyes. It watches past the driveway, watches me drink backyard beer, watches while I kiss the silver pipe. Watches like it knows something I don't, but I do. Gone 3 months now, she's not coming back. Everything has its own color, I suppose, in this. This is called The Color of Absence. The color of passion, the color of blood, the color of penance, the color of iron when malleable, the color of a bruise that's almost pretty, the color of absence, the color of wings clipped too young, the color of dreams where we touch and you're still here, impossible color. The last three poems deal with friendship, and when we have a trauma and a tragedy, you do find out who your friends are, and people come out of the woodwork that you haven't spoken to till decades. And this one is for a friend of mine, Susan P. We went to high school. We graduated together in 1973. Reconnected on Facebook, got to talking, and realized we hadn't had any contact since high school graduation. So essentially it was 47 years. And but when I first reached out, the first I saw Susie, I was going to communicate with her. First thought I had was remembering meeting her at a freshman dance where my cousin introduced us. It was where the freshmen could get to know each other. Catholic school, Southside Catholic, it's no longer there. But and I was struck by her beauty. I was stunned, and I never made a move, although I did dance with her, because I just sort of figured I was out of my league. So I let it go. And we were friendly throughout high school, but not in any sort of romantic sense. So anyway, when I first got in touch with Susie, first thing she says to me is, remember how much fun we had at the dances. And that she told me she enjoyed dancing with me because she knew I was safe. I didn't know how to take that, if that was a compliment or not. But anyway. So then she said to me, well, write me a poem. And I said, well, okay, you know, we'll see. And sure enough, it came. And there's a reference to a number of songs here that I think you know, that you might pick up on if you're a certain age. But anyway, beginning with the title, This is called Color My World for Suzanne P. We danced with nuns watching. Keep your distance, move your hands. Guarding the dark places where we might disappear. Color my world. Stay in my corner. Only love can break your heart. Didn't I blow your mind this time? And more. Walking home to different lives, we touched but never kissed. Kept walking to where we are right now. And continuing the theme of friendship, there was a wonderful place half a mile from my house here in the North Hills called the Coffee Buddha. And that shut down in February of 2020. And the last literary event they hosted there was the launch of my book, Tilted World, that Chris published through Logos Press. That was wonderful. That was in February. And then on February 29th, because that was a leap year, they had a final thing there where they had a local band called the Hedonism Bots and a lot of fun. And people got together and had a wonderful time. And one of the best friends I made up at the Coffee Buddha was a young lady named Megan Bell. She was a barista and a poet. And she went on to do other things, but she came back for this farewell. And we spent a lot of time together that night talking about friendship, about life, et cetera. And when I got home, I wrote this poem for her. And this is called Carried Where We Go for Megan at the Coffee Buddha. Beauty blossoms new each day if we fix our eyes to see it. Wisdom comes with age if we keep the door ajar. There will be pain, there will be loss. What we hold will shatter. But hearts bind in the dark. Love follows light. Friends are folks we didn't know who arrive unexpected. And never leave, carried where we go. And the last poem I'll leave you with is for my friend Nicole, who was fighting some of her own battles and I think began to come out on top and find herself. And she told me she always wanted purple hair. She was in her 40s and she decided, to hell with it, I'm going to dye my hair purple. And she did. And then she also did her first podcast, kind of launched a new life for herself. So this was for Nicole, but it's really for all of us because we all have our own shit to deal with in life. But somehow I still remain optimistic. So we'll see. But this is called Purple Hair and Podcasts for Nicole. Pain shapes our paths in ways we'd rather not walk. Yet we arrive, voices breaking air, still sexy. Thanks a lot. That's going to do it for me tonight. I look forward to hearing the rest of you read.
Thank you so much. That was incredible. And I'm going to turn things over to our second reader of the night, Cameron Barnett.
Hey, thank you, Halsey. Thanks, Bart, for opening us up with those wonderful poems. And thanks, as always, to Joan and Chris for the Hemingway series and for having me here this evening. In particular, thank you to Chris for opening with his remarks and those two poems. I had another poem I was gonna open up with, but it reminded me of another poem I have in a manuscript in progress that I think is fitting for the holiday that just passed. And then I have another poem later that's fitting for a more somber event going on right now. So I'll open with this first poem called Earl, the Electrician. My grandfather moved cargo in the European theater behind Allied lines to keep our boys supplied. My grandfather rewired the island of Okinawa after America bombed and broke a whole nation. My grandfather was honorably discharged back to a broken nation, unwilling to rewire itself for people like him. This next poem is dedicated to my sister, which is, there's nothing particularly special about that other than I always like to announce it because I love her. This poem is called Because. Because I was always better at word games. Because my sister was always better at Mancala, her hand a shifty, surly, scooping sidewinder, dipping into the pockmarked mahogany between us at 12 and 10 apiece. Her hand a constant passing back and forth around the board, my hand shaped better for pen and paper. Because picking up pieces means knowing where to place them. Because we are pieces of the people who came before us. Because our ancestry is more Plinko than Pac-Man. Yet this redistribution she was so good at, like something in the blood. And it made mine boil to watch her snatch away every last glob of glass into the end pit. And I'd marvel at how easy it was for her to get there. Because it takes so much movement to wind up where you're headed. Because Mancala means movement. Because she would drop her last stone in the store and say, eat your heart out. And I tried in vain to prove her wrong and always sewed too short and filled the remaining spaces with words I wasn't proud of. Because every game is still a word game to me. And I could give the definition of countenance or easily spell nauseous correctly on command, but I couldn't seem to count my moves correctly ahead of time. And isn't this what family is for? Wasn't our blood picked up and dropped here, moved all around this continent just to arrive where we are? What's the word for that? I'm asking because at 28, in the evening of my youth, I'm only just learning that words aren't everything. Because even though these childhood games are still fresh in my head, I still wish my sister could pick us up like little pieces of glass and place us right back there. So today is the centennial anniversary of the Tulsa race massacre, which I feel has been increasingly, not only in the news, I know Biden spoke there today and made remarks, but just increasingly something that people are becoming aware of. It's an event I only learned of maybe 6 or 7 years ago as I was working on other events, racial issues and events in history that I didn't always know of or didn't know the full picture of. And there's documentation of this event. One of the more famous pieces is a photograph of the top of Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, it was known as, during the attacks and during particularly a bombing that occurred. And the name of the photo is called Little Africa on Fire. And so this poem is written after the name of that photograph, Little Africa on Fire. This is how the story begins, with a touch, a bump, a hot mouth, or jostled skin in an elevator, escalation, tension, even just the illusion of trespass. It always seems the smallest contact triggers the fire. The tip of a match struck along the lips of containment. For a while, my sister and I thought the world had no color until the 1960s, convinced old movies and photos were always true representations of history, that they always told the whole story, that color came between cartoons and civil rights. And long before then, the world was forever two-toned, light and dark, sometimes with little flecks or anomalies in the corners. Upon seeing pictures of our parents, both black and white and in color, we asked, what changed? Upon seeing pictures of Greenwood, both beautiful and burned, I ask, what other lies have I been taught to trust? There are three parts to a ghost story. The specter, planes in the sky, dynamite dropped on a black mob, a white mob with a machine gun raining bullets, American flag high behind it, fire and smoke all around, a long march past husks of burned out churches, 8 days of internment of blacks by the thousands, loops of litigation twisting the language of massacre into riot, insurance claims lost in the litter of legal destruction. The apparition. A flat view of Earth has always made Africa look little, smaller than Greenland. A flat view of Earth is what schools have used for us to see ourselves. A flat view of humanity has always singed the map, curled its edges into a close embrace of segregation, coiled pages of history away from prosecution and punishment. The murmur. We know a lie when it unfurls land flat in our hands. We know our hauntings because a family always keeps its ghosts close. We know pain. We know plunder. We know echoes. This is how to listen to a ghost story. Remember that there are no better angels above or beneath our skies, above or beneath charred churches and trees. All these angels, their halos falling augustly, deciduously, are all just stories strapped to a branch of history we seem to lose against the forest. Heaven is a black place, a smoky silhouette the tintype tattles on. Heaven is full of anomalies. How do I explain my homesickness for this? It's 2021, and I can't stop dreaming about flames in my mouth, in my palms and eyes at all times. I can't stop crying for Tulsa and 100 years spent dirt deep and silent beneath our feet. This is how to cross-examine a ghost. Jostle it with radar and listen to the echoes of old fire. Sometimes it takes a hot mouth to pronounce what the dirt has been whispering for generations. Sometimes flecks in the corners of photos are more than anomalies, the black and white of it lying in plain sight. This is how to give a ghost a home. Touch the dirt outside your house and ask how different it might feel in Greenwood. Ask if the anomalies sunk into the earth push against the surface around town, if those anomalies still burn down deep, if the anomalies are still hot in their mouths, tongues unstruck matches of history. It's the silence of fire that is always forgotten, spectral, substituted for memory. No more. Little Africa is a ghost sitting in the corner, its pose a perfect picture, its mouth a bonfire of heritage, its heart an anomaly pounding up against the dirt. And this last poem is called South Carolina. From here, perhaps I come, the counties as crinkled as the creeks, but the ground runs low, slow scraped into the horizon where the highway slips beneath the dark edges of the day, like the long pull of a comforter up past the eyes. I'm too fast for this place, but my blood has borne that out already. Everything, as they say, slower here. The land is an open mouth full of water. Even the rain has nowhere to go. It sits and seeps by the road on the way to the plantation I visit one night. Under a Chinese light show, I hold my love's white hand while we pass LED frogs and dragons. I'm not looking at the lights. I regard the live oaks and what they might know. What weight has sunk their roots and gnarled their limbs? Perhaps we recognize each other. I didn't know how wooded this land was. I don't know everything that these woods know, but I know the dark edges of the plantation hold back everything I love. The pulse in my neck is a whisper of wings through the branches. In the air, a barracoon tune hangs like Spanish moss. In this, my making. In this, my heart. There is no joggling board flexible enough to bring together my tears and the turf. From here, perhaps I come, through a line of blacksmiths, the census labeled illiterate. And from illiteracy, they come with the name fogey, hammered into their blood. And from some other blood, we know that they were purchased. I regard South Carolina as I do Ireland, two islands in a sea of my making. Sometimes I wonder what else the land has lied to me about. I wonder what the history books would say if they knew how blood could echo. I wonder today, as the news plays, what they expect me to think of social distancing, as if I'm not always 6 feet away from really knowing who I am. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cameron. Again, I was just telling Joan before the reading started that we're just having a really good series, and I just anticipate everybody else being just as great. So our next reader is Jamila Rice. So I'm just going to turn things right on over.
Hello. All right. Thank you, both Joan and Chris, for inviting me. And thank you, Whitewell Books. It's been a long day, and this is a short week, so how about that? So I'm going to start off with a poem that's probably not finished yet, but I like the way that it sounds a little bit, so we'll see. All right, so this one is entitled Young, Rust Belted, and Black. To be Black in the Rust Belt, how does it taste? The cabbage is sweet, caramel crusted, crisp, dark edged, sour shredded, slick, cool on tailgated red hots. The cabbage is mayo thick, sugar sprinkled, vinegar, dashed on cayenne, scotch bonneted or paprikaed, slow cooked meat. The cabbage is garlic, onioned, black peppered with beef, corn, canned, because cabbage is cheap. It's a layer, language, of working hands, working each leaf into an end of month promise from the bitter core. Thanks. All right, so the next one, the title comes from a German word meaning forest, solitude, and I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation, but I tried to write it down phonetically in my own way. So that is Weit Einsamkeit. Okay. And I thought of this because there's a place in Pittsburgh. I grew up really poor, and my mother made sure that we took advantage of any and all free activities that we can engage in the city of Pittsburgh. And there are a lot of them, if you are really looking for them. And one was we took a lot of visits to Panther Hollow, especially deep down in during all seasons. So here's one. Even at 8, it smells. Textures under my feet, shod and bare, a lesson. A memory of where to step, where to leap, right foot extended, where to duck, afro puff protected from hungry January branches, dark winter bones. My hands gloved and uncovered, feel the ghost prints of other travelers who crossed this cobbled footbridge, drawn their fingertips over its mossy edges, never considering the hands that cut and laid each stone. By 10, I knew to listen and sniff for water and wild things, to sit and listen for the difference between mammals' trots and gallops, to find a clearing to clear my ever-growing head and learn from this teacher that we're never truly alone. The next poem I wrote, because I am very forgetful, and one day I went to the gym in the morning and realized as I was getting dressed and I was on my way to work that I had forgotten my shoes. So I didn't have any shoes to wear to work, and I really could not wear the sneakers that I had. So I went into the lost and found some boots, and really hoped that they were not going to be super icky. So this is that poem, Boots. Today I wear a stranger's boots, my size, but not mine. My feet tighted slip inside when I walk, sweat in the pleather, and I hope they had no cooties at a choir. I sprayed them inside, but they're not mine. Discarded, left behind, desperate for footwear forgotten at home, no time to return, I rifle through lost and found, find one at a time, my size, but not mine. At work, unsolicited, I reveal my secret. Gross, Ray says. Gross, to wear what is not yours and on your feet, to walk in what should not be. Feet, soul slides, pinch in unfamiliar places, and I hope I don't get blisters. I walk marathons in Portland, 4 days of Western discovery, uncovering the truth of myself. Gross, I said, to wear a life for so long that wasn't mine. Like these boots, I cannot wait to take this life off and finally let my skin breathe. The next poem was a response to a poem that I wrote about hope, because I was thinking about the difference between hope and faith. And then I started personifying faith and I was like, wow, faith is something. So faith is hope with teeth bared. Faith is a grin, a snarl, a throat's growl, love song singing now, now, now. You must not fear. Fierceness is in your jaw's snap, under your ears. It's behind your tongue, below its back's pull. Faith is a fire tended, eating, growing ravenous in the consuming. Feed it what you've torn, broken down, what others discard. Unguarded, loosen your stance, knees ready to pounce or take the next hit. Faith ain't fucking around with your punk ass, and neither should you. And the last two poems are poems that I wrote when I did my own little mini writing marathon at the Philadelphia Museum of Art a couple of years ago. There was one exhibit that just completely sat me down. Like it actually sat me down on a bench in the exhibit. And it was an exhibit of quilts from G's Bend, if anybody is familiar with the G's Bend quilts from Alabama. If you're not, look it up. You will be transformed. If you're not, are you alive? No, I'm just kidding. this poem also came to me because of the quilts that had been passed down in my family that I never actually really valued until I started making quilts myself. And then after I started looking into our family history and realizing how old the quilts that my great grand aunt had kept from her mother actually were. The exhibit resonated with me, and here's that poem. It's called Souls Grown Deep. We take our pain, cut it, strips, squares, triangles, the obtuse and equilateral, the chaos of color rich and faded in the Alabama sun, worn from the wearing, the rubbing of Yoruba, Igbo, and Wolof thighs, amalgam of migration forced, we piece like our DNA found the rhythm. And we see, and we sew, and we sing, Fingertips working a rhythm to meet the beat of our tapping feet. We sew hard truths into beauty to keep us alive, to keep us living, to keep our souls to keep. And the last poem, and I'm really hoping she is actually on here, is for my mom. Some people from Pittsburgh might know my mother, Dr. Aisha White. I have to always like claim her because people don't believe she's my mom for some reason. But we have the same laugh, if you've ever noticed that, those of you who know us both. But there was another exhibit at the Philadelphia Museum, and it was a Yoshitoshi Spirit and Spectacle exhibit, which was another breathtaking one that sat me down. And I wrote this because there was a painting that was depicting an event that happened on my mother's birthday, but 77 years prior. So here's that poem. 77 years, Before my mother's birth, a fire began in Shiacho. All night it burned like my grandmother's labor pains, that long ago fire bore prints from the great Yoshitoshi. Studies in blacks and whites, waves of red brown could be blood red, earth scorching like my grandmother's womb. Push, each woodcut print made separately, layer upon layer, push. The ink through the screen, push the woodcut down, push yourself to wait for the crown till she's ready, this second girl, sign of fire born to ignite in silence. Push, blood slick hair, pale brown face, torso, toes, black pupils and iris nearly overpower her eyes, whites. Clenched fists raise, shaking with power. Thank you.
Oh, that was so good. I feel like I am just like, I'm just going to go sit down and write after this and like, no, don't mind me. That's how I feel right now. It's just been such a good reading. Okay. Yeah. I'm just going to turn things right over to Madeline Barnes.
Thank you so much. I've loved all of the readings so far. I'm so grateful to be here. And yeah, I'm Maddie. I lived in Pittsburgh for 23 years. I live in Brooklyn now, but coincidentally, I am in Pittsburgh in my parents' house. And yeah, Pittsburgh will always be home to me, and I'm so happy to be here. So I'm so glad that Jamila brought up quilts. A passion of mine is embroidery and quilting, and it segues perfectly into something I wanted to share. In February, my third chapbook came out. It's entitled Women's Work. It came out from Tolson Books, and it's a hybrid work that includes original embroideries and collage and found poetry from the public domain. So you can see on the front, there's an embroidery that I made, and you can see the back of the hoop on the back cover. And since we're virtual, I thought I'd use the opportunity to share the interior with you. I usually don't get to do that at readings, so I'm going to share my screen. Okay, this is Women's Work. The long winter evenings give a woman a splendid chance for sewing or embroidery, but her eyes suffer from the strain unless she has a good light. Maker. We're disobedient and durable. Folded to position. There is this unity or oneness. It never flickers. First. Silent correspondence. Overworked women. Superficial structures. Perfecting labor. Daily production ensures prompt service. The embroideress has been influenced. What a wealth of warm hospitality this picture reveals. In this illustration, the beautiful foliage outside seems to vie with the rich furnishings in harmony of color and richness of contrast. Of interest to the housewife, everything except behaving. They do it. The happiest place, the happiest place, the happiest place. We aim to please and invite you to a sitting. Let our young friends try this means of improving, and they will be astonished at the result. Female, not a vigorous. Always reliable. Pattern repeated on formal lines, gathering stitches irregular. If the thread breaks short, open a few stitches. Kill 'em quick, kill 'em quick. Come along, I've had dangerous adventures. So that's women's work. Thanks for going on that journey with me. I thought I would read a little bit from a new project I'm working on. It's titled The Memory Dictionary, and it's a manuscript that plays with the meanings of words and their accepted definitions. And due to the pandemic, I've been thinking about what words I would want to leave behind. I don't know if anyone else is on that path, but I thought I would read from the H section of the dictionary for Hemingway's. So I will start there. Haircut, noun, the sensation of building oneself with more than base materials. Hamburger, noun, a coward prematurely absolved of all blame and responsibility. Hammer, verb, to find a way to preserve hope and meaning. Handsomeness, noun, a state of disorder. Hanker, verb, to fail to act on one's suspicions. Harbor, noun, a song about crescent moons. Harmonize, verb, to stop over-explaining. Harpoon, noun, to take a sentence from someone else's biography for the purposes of embroidering and embellishing it. Harpsichord, verb, to gain widespread fame for the invention of a remedy. Haste, noun, transformational medical care. Hatred, noun, to turn a historical argument on its head. Health, noun, a state of dreamy repose. Heart, verb, to investigate the law of one's own voice. Hector, verb, to raid a noblewoman's pharmacy. Hedgehog, noun, sleep devaluing leadership. Helicopter, verb, to conceptualize the body as an integrated yet brittle whole. Heliotrope, noun, a material similar to chicken wire. Helix, verb, to light a cigarette and look straight into the camera. Hellhound, noun, a surrendered parking space. Hem, verb, to strive for the look of a decayed celluloid. Hemlock, verb, to sever the tie between oneself and a source of pain. Hen, noun, a successful bank robbery. Henchman, noun, a whiny dishwasher. Herald, verb, to demonstrate reluctance. Herbivore, noun, a figure standing with arms outstretched, hands clasped in prayer. Hexagon, verb, to pass around a bottle of wine as one goes mad. Horoscope, noun, a pigeon that makes mistakes. Hickey, noun, a portfolio of miniature paintings. Honeycomb, noun, a template for radical affection. Hug, verb, to tend to wounded sounds. Hurricane, noun, what remains of one's courage. Hurt, noun, wheat we thought was water. Hydraulic, adjective, pertaining to the memory of the sound of bullets. Hydroplane, verb, to forget the details of someone's face. Hyper, noun, a girl who hides in a wardrobe that smells of cedar, pine, and walnut. So that's that project. And I thought to close it down, I think I have 2 minutes. I wanted to read a poem or two from my first book, which came out in 2020. I know we have some other 2020 authors here and we have to stick together. It was kind of a rough year to have a first book come out. So exciting, but definitely unexpected. My mom's first book came out as well. And yeah, so it's titled, You Do Not Have to Be Good. It's from Trio House Press. And I thought I would read the poem that is titled, Some Answers I Wrote on a Long-Term Disability Questionnaire. And it combines a questionnaire some of the questions that are asked, which are sometimes absurd, and more playful answers, combining like my own language with found language from astronomy magazines and stuff like that. So, are your illnesses, injuries, or conditions related to your work in any way? I got caught up in the destructive gravity of Sagittarius A and paid the price. Are you still unable to work because of your illnesses, injuries, or conditions? If an object is moving toward us, its spectral lines shift to shorter wavelengths. If it's moving away, the lines swing to longer wavelengths. The higher the velocity, the greater the shift. Have you filed or do you intend to file for any other public disability benefits? This could happen if the ejected stars come from a stellar disk surrounding the supermassive black hole. When do you believe your conditions became severe enough to keep you from working, even if you have never worked? We do not have a complete survey of the entire sky. However, theorists believe that the Milky Way is surrounded by a triaxial football-shaped distribution of dark matter. You may use this space for any explanation. If you need more space, attach a separate sheet. If unknown, check unknown. How much the trajectories deviate and in what direction they do this depend on the shape and orientation of the dark matter halo. I have been here so many times before. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Maddie. That was great. And I know that is the benefit of the Zoom readings. We get to share the visual work as well. And I'm just going to pass things over to our final reader of the evening, M. Soledad Caballero.
Thank you, everybody, for being here, to a White Whale and to the brilliant and inspiring readers that came before me. I'm just going to read a few things from my forthcoming debut collection. I think they're relatively self-explanatory. Okay. Ode to my hair. It was dark, wild, coarse, brown-red curls. It hung a long, thick rope behind me. A way to hide, a way to be seen. I pinned or braided it in summer. It was not a crown, but it sparkled, made my whole self feel whole. This rope, a talisman, I clung to when I ached for signs of beauty in the mirror, though I never lived as if beautiful. No dark forest queen ever envied my face, eyes, lips, skin, voice. Still, she might have given a kingdom for my hair, raged through fire, ravaged whole fields with ice to have it, my one spark of Venus. Then, one day, months into chemo, it was gone. It fell out at night in clusters, on the brush in sad globs and dead clumps, like bits of wood, burned, ashen, like abandoned gray ghouls left behind after battle. There was no stopping it. All locks vanished, no more waves of color and curl. Bare, empty like a field without poppies, I had nothing to cling to but a strange, bright scalp. A year later, new growth, new kinks and swirls, like small sprites, new spirals hang, dangle like crystals below my shoulders glowing. Strangers on the street ask, is it real? No way to hide. Chemicals made me otherworldly. Coils of slate blue, gray, purple, mixed with white. Alchemy of medicine and time. This next poem I wrote for a friend of the family who went to college and never came back. She's still missing, and I think of her sometimes, and I like to think of her as just out in the world as opposed to disappeared. bird girl. Half her life, she has been gone in silence. In silence, in the darkness, who took her, who disappeared this girl, willowy and sweet. A black bird of a girl with dark liquid eyes. Smoke eyes, smoke mouth, a smile like a song, a secret, a smile like light through leaves of a tree. This bird girl, laughing girl, with no freckles, no moles, just a scar on her nose, a sliver of a scar, this girl with eyes like rain, silver eyes, silver scar. This bird of a girl with morning ahead of her that day and work and coffee, cream and sugar and coffee, the sun warm on her skin. This bright bird of a girl leaving home for work, for school, for life. This bird girl who walked from the mall to the beach, to the sunset, to the rocks, after work, after school, after home, she walked and left no prints, no scratches, no blood, no books, no pictures, no phone, just the shadow of herself. Bird girl, who took you, bird girl, who made you so small? We could not find you with any words or guns or people or stories or secrets or love. Who made you so small? The next poem, my book has sort of weird, I don't know how it's actually a book that someone decided was a book, but someone, not me, thought, hey, these all work together, which I guess sometimes happens when you write a collection. So I wrote about being an immigrant, and then I wrote about having cancer, and they somehow work in this weird balance. And so this is what my fantasies are about now, the order of things. As with all things now, I want order. I want to take the strings of chaos, the lonely stamp, the leftover paper, the bruised too ripe peach, the thick flyaway gray hairs, and stack them. Stack them in a row. Put them in a box, label each part, taking time to make sure I note the skin of the peach, the wire tangle of the hair, the missing colors on the faded stamp. I want to make them whole again, full and not dead or dying. Order is a place of rest and stopping. Long ago, I said I wanted to be light, the way silk feels against the heat of the sun. I imagined floating in this world, always sure of how beautiful the mess would be. But I have learned cells can grow to wild proportions along the inside pulsing parts of the body. Carving their path with serrated blades along muscle tissue, the pink inside of the breast, under the arm, reaching for the small jellyfish glands. This was more than a mess, those cells, an aching mouth of angst and blood, urgent for the rest of it, the rest of me. And I alone in this jungle of living, a stumbling wanderer. This is not the story I wanted. And I'm gonna finish, I hope I have time, with the last poem in the collection. It's for my niece, my goddaughter, Natalia, who's 15 and is definitely 15 in that way that is wild and strange, rooted. When I held her a decade and some ago, she was a world of blood, a slight sack with wide eyes and a hungry mouth. Small succubus, demanding, angry, yet beloved, so beloved. My mother, my father, my sister, we all traveled 3 time zones to hold her, to see her, this new alien creature made from old world stories, plane rides, suffering, and luck. She was our first, the first girl, the first to be grown from here, not a weed or a stolen vine, not planted from elsewhere, but rooted here in this soil. She was not piecemealed or half-made. This land of misery and promises would claim her. She was of it. We held our wonder, imagined the land that would hold us all now to her. No need for paper, documents of our naturalized tongues. No more aching for ground and memory. She would be the new world. We all saw our bright planet in her small blue eyes, curly hair. We did not want to see any accents or sadness. She would be the door. She would be the gate. She would be the hole to our brokenness. This is how the muting continues. We contort. We twist ourselves. We aspire to quiet spaces in between cracks. Now she looks for her face in the black and white pictures in my mother's shoeboxes. What am I? Who am I? She demands. She rages against the emptiness of bootstraps and hidden shames. Oh, we try to tell her something of our deep, deep past and sorrow, what the Pacific smells like, the way to hold her tongue to roll an R, how to eat cebolla con tomate, how to claim more than this dirt. But we are ghosts. We have given up the flesh. We are like ghouls after the war. And she has no patience for quiet immigrants. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, everybody. Soledad, Cameron, Jamila, Maddie, Bart, everybody. I'm going to pass things over to Joan to, you know, just end the night. All right.
Well, I am speechless again. This was an astonishing reading. I am thrilled that it is being recorded, and in no time at all, Anna will have it to us so we can hear it. And Don Sturica can post it on the Hemingway Summer, on the Hemingway's Poetry Series.blogspot.com, and with your screenshots, actually with some nicer photos even. But I really want to thank you all. This was just astonishing. And it's so great. I want to mention, I'm going to thank Chris for that wonderful introduction, for reading poems by Matt Borison and Bruce Weigel, whom we had so much hope to have in our series. I want to mention that I posted on my Twitter a remembrance of the reading that was given by Matt Borison, Sheila Carter-Jones, Sam Hazo, Kathleen True Swayzik, and Jimmy Savetic in 2018. And for that Memorial Day, and I would, you might want to go back and just see it. It's just an amazing reading. And sadly, we lost Kathleen, who was a nurse in Vietnam, and of course, Jimmy. And I really, it's so wonderful to have these, this archive. And thank you, Chris, for your intro. And thank you all for the power of these poems. And so much that I think we'll want to hear again and again. And I hope you will find your way to White Whale Bookstore and snag a book. Snag a book. Okay. So we have next, in 2 weeks, you know, we're going every 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, we have Jose Padua, Michael Sims, Sheila Squalanti, Matthew Yucia, whose name I may not have gotten quite right, and Bob Wallachy. And they'll be reading on June 15th. And I want to thank you all. Thank you to White Whale, and thanks to White Whale. Thanks to Chris. Thanks, Anna. Halsey.
Here I am.
Yay. And do you want to open it up so that everybody can, we can all clap for these amazing poets, Halsey? Can
absolutely. Yeah, here
let's
we go.
Let's do that, because we need to give a big hurrah. And thank you so much.
Absolutely. Everybody should have the ability to turn their cameras on and their
mics. Turn those cameras on. Let's see those faces. We had poetry tonight. As Jimmy would say, you have honored poetry. Thank you all so much.
Yes, thank you, everybody. And as Joan said, join us in 2 weeks for the next Hemingway's reading. And we have plenty of other readings that you can check out on our Eventbrite webpage, as well as our website. You can go and RSVP at eventbrite.whitewhalebookstore.com. And I will see you next time. Have a good night. Bye,
and
everybody.
Go and buy those books at White Whale.
Okay. Yes, yes, please come. Bye, everyone.